This recording, New Zealand 19, is copyright the International Dialects of English Archive. Comagat Secure is copyright Douglas N. Onoroff, Jill McCullough, and Barbara Somerville.
Comagat Secure. Well, here's a story for you. Sarah Perry was a veterinary nurse who had been working daily at an old zoo in a deserted district of the territory. So she was very happy to start a new job at a superb private practice in North Square near the Duke Street Tower. That area was much nearer for her and more to her liking. Even so, on her first morning, she felt stressed. She ate a bowl of porridge, checked herself in the mirror, and washed her face in a hurry. Then she put on a plain yellow dress and a fleece jacket, picked up her kit, and headed for work. When she got there, there was a woman with a goose waiting for her. The woman gave Sarah an official letter from the vet. The letter implied that the animal could be suffering from a rare form of foot and mouth disease, which was surprising because normally you would only expect to see it in a dog or a goat. Sarah was sentimental, so this made her feel sorry for the beautiful bird. Before long, that itchy goose began to strut around the office like a lunatic, which made an unsanitary mess. The goose's owner, Mary Harrison, kept calling Comma, Comma, which Sarah thought was an odd choice for a name. Comma was strong and huge, so it would take some force to trap her, but Sarah had a different idea. First, she tried gently stroking the goose's lower back with her palm, then singing a tune to her. Finally, she administered ether. Her efforts were not futile. In no time, the goose began to tire, so Sarah was able to hold on to Comma and give her a relaxing bath. Once Sarah had managed to bathe the goose, she wiped her off with a cloth and laid her on her right side. Then Sarah confirmed the vet's diagnosis. Almost immediately, she remembered an effective treatment that required her to measure out a lot of medicine. Sarah warned that this course of treatment might be expensive, either 5 or 6 times the cost of penicillin. I can't imagine paying so much, but Mrs. Harrison, a millionaire lawyer, thought it was a fair price for a cure.
Okay, well, I was born in Gisborne, which is a pretty... I mean, they call it a city by New Zealand standards, but it's only got, I can't remember, 40,000, 50,000 people, so it wouldn't be called a city over here. But we left when I was 5, so I have a few memories of there, but we lived out in the country. I remember there were cattle yards, fields, sort of my memories are all sort of very rural. And then we were 5, we moved to Auckland, which is the big city, which is 1 million people, which is, by New Zealand standards, very big. And then we had a pretty settled existence there. My parents moved out of home. They waited till me, the youngest kid, was 18, and then they moved out of home. Rather than waiting for us to leave, they said, 4 sons, we've had enough. So they moved out, and we had to find our own way. So, New Zealand was right. Went to the local high school, local intermediate school. You guys call it a middle school. Local high school, there were nothing special. You know, they weren't elite high schools. We just went to the one that we were zoned for. But it was fun. I could walk or bike to all of them, and I made some good friends there and had quite a fun. I had pretty good memories of growing up as a teenager. And actually differences to America, I can definitely see some. I noticed my wife actually said when we went to New Zealand, compared to the playgrounds in New Zealand are much more dangerous, which means they're much more fun. You know, the kids get to play and have adventures and do stuff. Even playtime in the school grounds, you know, lunchtime or stuff like that, are less supervised. It's funny, I signed up on Facebook to something called New Zealanders in the USA, like a Facebook page, and, you know, people commenting their experiences, and some New Zealanders were talking about being back in New Zealand for a few months and putting their kids in and commenting just how unsupervised playtime was. So the only time the teachers intervened, you know, if it actually got to full-on fighting, then the teachers would sort of come out and intervene. But except for that, the kids would just, you know, on their own do what they like, organizing games like Bull Rush. The game of Bull Rush goes like this. You have one person who stands in the middle of the field and everybody lines on the side. And that person picks out somebody. And their job is to make it to the other side of the field. And the person who picked them out is their job to stop them. Any means. There are no rules. Just like one person has to get to the other side of the field. The other person has to stop them. If the person succeeds in stopping them, they're now a team. And there's two of them. And they pick out another person. And so on until somebody gets through. Sometimes nobody gets through. But eventually, at a certain point, usually when somebody makes it through, you call, Bull Rush! And everybody runs for the other side of the field, and the people who are catching just try to bring as many people to the ground as they can, in which case now you might have 10 people in the middle catching, and the game keeps going until there's nobody left to run and everybody's been caught. And it's kind of violent, you know, as you can imagine, you know, people just trying to charge from one side of the field to the other. And I was delighted to hear that kids still play Bull Rush. I thought maybe, you know, they'd gone in and banned it because it was, oh, it wasn't safe or something like that. But it was a great game. We loved it.